Hello and welcome to Series 2 of The Heart of Teaching. My name is Aoife Lynham. I'm a teacher, educator and researcher in Hibernia College. And today I'm delighted to speak to Dr. Tressa Bowe, who's a primary school teacher from Cork with over 20 years teaching experience. For the last 3 years, Tressa has been teaching in Los Angeles. But across her career, she has had a keen and special interest in the area of literacy. Her PhD research focused on the role of on-site continuing professional development in promoting a whole school approach to comprehension strategy instruction. More recently, in 2020, Tressa has become better known to educators on both sides of the Atlantic on Instagram as at Between the Covers of a Good Book, where she shares her extensive knowledge about literacy and picture books on a daily basis. So Tressa, thank you so much for being here today and for chatting to me. I really appreciate it. So I suppose maybe for those who aren't aware about what you're doing, especially on Instagram and things like that, can you tell me about yourself and a little bit about your passion for books and where that came from?
Okay. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak here. I have been an avid reader for as long as I could remember. And when I started teaching, literacy and reading was something I really wanted to promote. I taught for 17 years in Ireland, and during that time I did my master's in comprehension. I did my PhD in that area too, and then I decided to take a break from Ireland and to go teach in the States to challenge myself and expand my teaching skills and also to see what was going on in the terms of literacy over here. So for the last 3 years, I have been teaching in Los Angeles, in the east side of Los Angeles, and getting to grips with a different curriculum, a very different style of teaching, different standards in terms of expectations in literacy for the children. And recently, since January, I decided to share a lot of that knowledge, particularly in terms of children's books and how we can use children's books to create a classroom community that encourages engagement and dialogue and thinking, and that would have our children not just learning content, but learning the skills that they need for our life. Because I'm very aware that they have phones, and they have technology, and they're able to check up all the information that I had to learn when I was a kid. So therefore, what they really need is the skills to be able to analyze what they're reading, to formulate their own opinion, to ask questions, and to use that information to best suit whatever purpose they have for reading it.
Brilliant. And I know we spoke about how you create that community of learners, because that can be quite challenging to create that atmosphere, particularly if children aren't reading, if children have, you know, phones and things like that, computer games that they're far more interested in, that are far more entertaining, they might think, than reading a book. How do you create that kind of community of readers and establish that kind of atmosphere in the classroom?
It's a lot of things coming together. But essentially, it comes from the teacher and their enthusiasm and their passion for reading, but in a way that has to be authentic. So I start at the beginning of the school year by sharing who I am as a reader myself. I show them photographs of me as a kid. I tell them the books I enjoyed reading. But I'm also really, really conscious of saying to them the books I didn't enjoy reading. Because you don't want to be a reluctant reader sitting in the class going, great, that's another teacher who loves reading but doesn't get me. So I tell them about how I hated The Hobbit and how I've tried several times at different stages of my life to love The Hobbit, and I can't do it. But we do a reading timeline. I ask the parents to help create the reading timeline for their child. So we talk about the books that they've liked since they were a kid, the books, and we look at how it evolves. One of the things I also do at the start of the year is I do a reading interest survey with the children. My chance to get to know who they are, how they feel about reading, how the interests that they have outside of reading. Do they like cookery? Do they like arts and crafts? Do they like Minecraft? It throws me into who they are, but it also gives me indications of what books they might like or what I could move them on to. I do a lot of reading conferences, talking to them, finding out what's going on, finding out what their struggles are. And one of the things I do with Dear that has changed from what I used to do is in the beginning when I started doing Dear, I was the model of the good reader. Mm-hmm. And I sat up at the top of the room reading my book. And the kids who liked reading also read their book. And the kids who didn't like reading sat there and they took their time for themselves. And I read a book by Donalyn Miller, The Book Whisperer, years ago. And she turned my thinking right on its head and said, you can't do that. You have to be engaged in conversation with them. So during that time now, I go around and I have quick conferences with children, finding out what they're reading, finding out if they're struggling with an area, having that conversation that might keep them engaged. I also do a lot of classroom transformations that give the children opportunities to see books. So we do like book tastings and camping out and fires and Harry Potter book transformations. They're all just different reasons to get the children sitting down with a pile of books, going through identifying ones that they want, Brilliant. They might like and they don't like. We do first chapter Fridays. Every Friday I read the first chapter of a book. I do lots of book talks. One of the things I really wanted to do, and I just couldn't do, was you see on Pinterest the teachers who do the displays of all the books.
Oh yes, yeah.
I can't do that. I started so many times every year. I start and then some stage in October I'm looking at two books on the wall when I know we've read 22 books.
Yes.
Yeah. So again, Donalyn Miller had a book called Game Changer that I read that suggested, well, instead of doing that, why don't you just carry the book around with you? So instead of having the book on the wall, I just put the book under my arm when I'm walking around the school. And that way every child gets to see and associate me with a book. It starts a conversation of what book are you reading? Is this any good? So it's small things like that. That's something I can do. Putting the picture on the wall is something other teachers can do, but it just doesn't suit who I am.
I love those ideas. Yeah. Just for anyone maybe who doesn't know, that Dear time is to drop everything and read. Yeah, lovely. That's brilliant. That's a really nice way of looking at that Dear time, because it usually is that silent and you're very passive, nearly in it as the teacher. I love that now kind of it's kind of going towards you engage more, you ask questions, you discuss. That's really good.
Yeah, because you're trying to spot, you know, who's the fake reader, who's the reluctant reader, and not shaming them, but helping them and saying, okay, I think you've got the wrong book.
But that's it. We all have those books where we're like, it's painful to try to finish it, you know, and that's why I really liked that you're saying that you kind of tell them the books that you didn't like as well, because I think that is so important, because they might just have gotten the wrong books and decided that they hated it because they were too hard and they weren't their interest and things like that. Yeah.
Part of teaching reading is teaching how to select a book and also having the conversations about when you abandon a book. Mm-hmm. We don't have a rule in the classroom that you have to pick up a book and finish it, because I don't. Mm-hmm. If I don't like a book, I give it a good shot, but I don't finish reading it if I really, really don't like it. Yeah. So instead we discuss, you know, how many pages seem fair in terms of giving it a good shot. And also, can you identify what the issue is that you don't like and meet a friend who has already read the book and say to them, listen, what's going on here? Because one of the times when we were reading Awful Auntie by David Williams is a really long intro. He sets it up and sets it up and sets it up, but the kids wanted the action to get going. Mm-hmm. So rather than abandoning it, they had a conversation with friends who had read it, who said, oh, you need to give it another 40 pages and I promise you it's worth continuing. So they're all important skills to learn.
That's great. And, you know, you mentioned that you've had that passion for books for as long as you can remember. Mm-hmm. You know, was there a teacher, was there someone out there that inspired that love of reading for you?
For me, I think it's going back to the old phrase where it says it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. I'm the product of so many teachers and people in my life who inspired me to read. The first is my mother. My mother just built a home community. She's an avid reader. So we were surrounded by books. She read to us. That passion was there from the beginning. She also taught me for a while in first class. My grand-aunt taught me in second class. So it was a real family community. But one of the teachers that really did inspire me was my third class teacher, Benny Galvon. I can still name all the books that she read to us.
Wow.
And it's not that I loved them all. She read The Midnight Fox by Betsy Byers. And I have a thing about animals telling stories. Even then I knew I didn't like the book, mm-hmm. but I loved her reading it. She read Ramona the Pest by Beverly Cleary, which I still read if I have a second grade class or a third grade class. I read them that. Tom's Midnight Garden, Santa brought it to me that Christmas because I couldn't wait for her reading it every day. And I still have a flashback of sitting up in bed on Christmas night, not wanting to go to sleep because I want to get ahead. So she really did inspire my love of reading.
That's fabulous. Oh, I love to hear that because I think that's really important that we realize that the power that we can have mm-hmm. with those little people in our class. I have a little one-year-old at the moment and I am bombarding him, the poor little fellow, with books. And he just loves turning the pages. He's not too interested in listening to me, but I'm hoping he'll be as much of an avid reader as I am because I just love it so much. But I suppose, why is reading so important? Because we're talking a lot about reading, but like, why is it? And I know you've done your master's and your PhD in it. Can you summarize it down as to why is reading so important for children?
We live in a world where all the information is given through literacy, be it multimedia literacy or word. They have to be able to understand written text and understand the text that comes in media. And more than ever, they have to be able to discern what their opinions are of it, whether they believe it or not. So there are three reasons why people write. They write to persuade, they write to entertain, they write to inform. So they're the three reasons that we read as well. We read to get people's opinion and inform our own. We read for entertainment and escape, and we read to get information. Our children are going to be growing up in a world where the information is presented in ways that we can't imagine. And we can't teach them everything that they need to know. But through reading and through the thinking skills that come along with reading, we can give them the life skills that they're going to need to be able to be full and active participants in that society and to be able to create their own content and tell their own story as well. And I think right now as well, we're beginning to see a movement, particularly here in the US, where we're looking around as well and saying, whose story is being told? Mm-hmm. How is history being told? How is the present being represented? And how are books and stories being used in either elevating or subverting people and their stories? So being able to read and being able to think about what you're reading is really important in advocating for yourself and for others.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of strategies or things do you do in the classroom? You mentioned earlier about comprehension being something mm-hmm. that, you know, you really focus on. And what kind of things or strategies do you do in a typical reading lesson?
So when I'm doing my reading lessons, I have both reading and comprehension. So with comprehension, I'm generally looking at, you know, making connections, very much the children asking and responding to their own questions rather than it being a teacher test of knowledge. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at making inferences, making predictions, vocabulary development, monitoring comprehension, and then bringing it all together through synthesizing. Having been in the US has really focused me in on their reading standards, which would be, you know, main idea, key details, summarizing, comparing and contrasting, looking at who's telling the story through point of view and perspective. So you have standards and you have then the comprehension skills that help the children identify the meaning and construct the meaning. One of the things that I've been very aware of in the last number of years and really tried to promote is a dialogic classroom. So a classroom where in the beginning, I'm modeling mm-hmm. and I'm showing them, but I'm very aware that I do need to step back and I do need to monitor the amount of teacher talk I'm doing and trying to give the children the skills and the strategies that they need where they engage with the text mm-hmm. and they engage with each other and they have conversations where they debate and argue and persuade and reconstruct their understanding. And that in a lot of that, what I am is a facilitator or an equal. I'm fully entitled to give my opinion, but only as an equal in the conversation. So that has been a huge shift in my perspective of my role as a teacher.
And I think it's really important, and even just when you're talking about opinions there, and getting children to respect other opinions and to see that lots of people will have lots of different opinions and they're allowed to voice them as long as it's in a respectful way. But that, you know, we have to accept that that other opinions, particularly as you're mentioning in the current climate, you know, there's a lot of different opinions out there, and it's very important that children understand that. I suppose, do you get time to read for yourself? Because I'm following you on Instagram and I absolutely love your Instagram page. So for anyone who is looking to follow you, it's that your handle is Between the Covers of a Good Book. So can you tell us a little bit about whether you find time for yourself to read, just for yourself?
I love children's books. And I was always an avid reader, and when I started teaching, I became aware that I was drawing very much on my old memories of what I read in school. And like I mentioned, Tom's Been My Garden, I loved it. And when I had my first fifth class, I pulled it out and it was a flop. I couldn't make it work. I didn't even enjoy it myself, and it made me realize that I can't be always pulling on the classics from the past. And I need to be reading children's books. Young adults' books are amazing.
They're brilliant. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
And that tends to be my favorite genre. So I'm very aware I'm not very up to date on what's happening in the adult reading market, but I do get great pleasure from reading, particularly the books that are aimed at fifth and sixth class, because when they're well written, they're as good as any adults, even sometimes better, because people are so conscious of their audience and how to make sure that the message comes across clearly.
Brilliant. So, yeah, well, actually, in the book club I'm in, you'd be delighted to hear that often young adult books are recommended as well, rather than always having, it's lovely to have that variety of different kind of books. I know you have a book club set up yourself for your students. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you'd go about setting that up?
So I've had three different types of book clubs, I would say, in Ireland.
Not surprised.
In Ireland, I was freer with what I could do. So over in the school I'm in America, my timetable is set by the school. So there's less flexibility in wanting to change what we're doing and what subject is happening. Whereas in Ireland, what I did was every second Thursday afternoon, it was book club. And I had multiple copies of different books, and we made... At the beginning, I pitched each one, and the only rule you had is that you had to join one of those book clubs. You could choose which one. You had to commit to reading, you know, whatever amount your book club decided, making notes on the post-it notes, and you had to stick with that book. That was one of the rules. You couldn't abandon it after 2 weeks and say, do you know what, it's not for me. If you joined the book club, you had to stay with that book club until the book was finished. And that was a great success, apart from me. I decided once again that I was going to join the Hobbit book club.
Oh, no.
I'm older now. I'm able for this. And I sat with my group, who were wonderful, but every Wednesday night I would be sitting in bed reading it going, I hate it.
Yeah.
And my kids then would be having wonderful discussions about it, and I'd be sitting there just going, I really didn't like it. I'm sorry, guys. So that worked really well in Ireland. Then what I did when I came to the US, because I couldn't work it during school time, I asked for volunteers who wanted to read during their lunchtime. So we would take the food upstairs to the parent area, which is soft seating, and we met and we ate our lunch, and that was really nice and very social. Right now we have, I suppose you could call it a book club. My children are on their summer holidays, but I'm very aware that, you know, things are not normal right now.
Of course.
And, you know, we have had since March a really, you know, it's not what any of us wanted. And my children are socially isolated and they're feeling lonely. And they've read all the books that they took home. So we're holding a read-aloud club. So Monday, Wednesday and Friday, they can join or not join. I normally get 5 or 6 kids who come, and it's a bit of a social interaction for them. They pick one of the picture books I have, I read it aloud to them, and we talk about it, and then they talk to each other. And it's very nice, and I think it's just really important right now that they have the option to do that.
That's lovely. And that was really why I wanted to talk to you in particular as well, because I think, you know, and if you read a lot of what's, particularly in Ireland now, what's being said about preparing to go back to school, you know, a lot of what's being said is, you know, don't bombard them with the academic side of things. You know, you don't need, it's not like you need to catch up in the last 3 months. You know, we need to be very careful. We need to mind our children. They've been through something that none of us have been through as children growing up. And I think that's where books are just a beautiful, beautiful resource to create a lovely atmosphere in the classroom, to get children back into this routine of school, to get them to talk about maybe experiences that they had. Is there any book in particular that you can think of that you would say, do you know what, this would be gorgeous to use when you go back to school in September?
There's a really great book called We Don't Eat Our Classmates by Peter Reynolds, and it would work right up. I read it to my fifth grade class this year and they just laughed so much, and I think that's what's going to be important. We need our kids to laugh. We need them to be together and to find things funny. This is a very, very funny book about a dinosaur who could start school, but is surrounded by delicious humans. Mm-hmm. So she quite regularly, you know, just eats one of them for a snack, and the teacher forces her to spit the child out, and the kids think it's just so funny. So that would be a really, really good one. I would also say to the senior class teachers, don't start with a novel. Don't go anywhere near a novel in the beginning. The children are going to have very short attention spans. I have a very short attention span living in this world. I find it very hard to focus on things. They're going to be exhausted with the school day. They're going to find it stressful. Our school psychologist explained it to us as they have to regain all the muscle memory that they had. They're going to be 6 months out of the classroom. They'll have done little bits of learning here and there in their own time, in their own space, where they wanted to do it. They're now going to be sitting in a classroom where we're probably going to have to say to them, you can't move from your seat unless you ask me permission. You can't go over here. This is out of zone. Don't try and do long lessons. We're going to have to treat all of the kids in some way like we treat them when their infants coming in, just in terms of bringing back, you know, classroom expectations, building up stamina for reading, building up stamina for paying attention, building up stamina for just being in a single space for a particular length of time. So it's a spiral curriculum.
Yeah, it is.
It will come. We always worked with where our kids were at. There's no single teacher who went into fifth class and said, right, well, the fourth class curriculum ended there, so I'm starting fifth class. We always reached down and said, let's see, do you know the prior knowledge that's foundational to this? And if you don't, I'm going to teach that.
Go back, yeah.
And this is going to be exactly the same thing, except we're going to probably have to go back further than we've ever done before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great advice. And especially around the novels, because that might have been something that would have appealed to people. But, oh, it'd be a nice thing to start a novel now. And that's excellent, excellent advice, because you're absolutely right about the attention spans. And I'm in the same boat as you. You know, you don't have the same attention span. No. It is harder. You're doing 101 things when you're at home and trying to adapt. So I think that's really good advice. You've been over in the US, you said, now for 3 years, and I thought it was really fantastic. You gave a lot of really useful advice on your Instagram page about, you know, how you moved it, the processes and how you got there. But I suppose, do you miss anything about Ireland?
Oh, yes. Obviously, my family and friends are a huge thing that I miss. And I was used to going back, you know, at summer and Christmas. So this is going to be the first challenge for me, is the first summer that I haven't gone home, and Christmas
That's
is
hard.
Unlikely as well. So that, yeah, you miss family, you miss friends. You miss the Irish way of doing things. Part of the reason why I wanted to come over was to understand what was uniquely specific, I suppose, to my school and to Ireland, and what was different in other places. And there is a very different way of doing things and seeing things. I like how sensible Ireland is, mm-hmm. How often no nonsense, and okay, we're all in this together, we just do it and we'll get through it and this is going to be fine. I miss chips. I was in I miss potatoes and I miss chocolate. I have said that an awful lot over here.
The chocolate in the US, I've been there. It isn't as good now as our Cadbury's and our Galaxy. No comparison.
Even their version of Cadbury's is different because it's not as creamy. So when my mother sends over the food packages, I'm shocked. So delighted.
I have a brother in Sydney who's in a similar position now. He'd usually come home once a year and even twice sometimes, and he's not coming home now. And it's same with Christmas. It's likely he won't be as well. And it's tough, isn't it? But he's the same. He loves those little food packages that come his way. So I've asked you about what you miss about Ireland, but I suppose what have you learned in the US that you think, oh, do you know what? I'd love to see that happening in Ireland within the education system.
I have received an awful lot of training over here in different areas. I know Ireland is moving a lot towards culturally responsive classrooms. Mm. That has been something that has really made me question a lot about myself and my assumptions and the way I deal and interact with children. So working in a community that isn't the same as me. So I'm the only white woman standing in the room. This has made me,
culture shock for us.
And look and say, okay, to what extent is this an assumption I have, or is this a stereotype? And what message do I implicitly give to my children? So the training I've received in that has been really, really great. There is a balance. The US is very, very focused on data and data informing practices and teaching and reflecting on your teaching. Mm-hmm. I do like using data to reflect. Yeah. So I do like the use of exit tickets and reflecting on those exit tickets to see, okay, did the children get this? Did they not? Do I need to reteach it? I like how specific that is, but then I don't like the extent it gets brought to in terms of testing. Testing is a very, very big deal here. It puts a lot of pressure on the children. So there's a happy medium, I think.
That's interesting. Anything to do with testing like that, I do think it does just panic you. Even if I think of it as an adult, it panics me. So I can't even imagine what it must feel like as a child to be going through that much testing. I know when we had the microtes and sigmatis when we were children ourselves, I used to dread it. You'd be so nervous taking your pencil and going into to do your test, and you do feel kind of categorized, I think, because you compare yourself if you hear, even though you weren't supposed to necessarily hear exactly what you'd gotten, but some schools would give that grade in the report and things like that. So it would be kind of make you feel a bit like, oh, maybe I'm not smart, or maybe I'm not as smart as this person. I do think it leads to a lot of comparisons, doesn't it? More so than is needed.
It's been something I've struggled with over here because data informs so much. It's also something that needs to be shared with the children. And that can be a challenge because I've always wanted to build them up and go, okay, so this is where we're going from here. And they look and go, yeah, but have you seen my score there? I can see it. So it's a challenge.
It's evidence for them, isn't it? It's evidence to say, well, no, I'm stupid because look at this.
So therefore, as a teacher, it brings everything that I have to go, okay, so to what extent do I need to share this information? What does the child need to know so that they're a true partner in the learning and that they're taking responsibility for their learning themselves? And also, how am I going to protect their self-esteem and give them a growth mindset?
Absolutely.
So there's a loss that the teacher needs to consider and balance, and a lot of knowledge that the teacher needs to have.
Absolutely. And every child is going to be different. So it's making that there is no one size fits all kind of an answer to how you deal with that. But I wanted, we're coming just towards the end now. I'm going to do a quick fire round with you. And then I have one more question to ask you before we finish. So I'll start off easy. What's your favorite color?
Purple.
Favorite children's author?
It changes all the time, but I will normally come back to Eve Bunting because she's Irish and I never knew she was.
Oh, favorite Instagram page?
I really, really like Hello Literacy and Hello Jen Jones. She runs both of them, but I think she's very, very knowledgeable on literacy. And I really like it.
Brilliant. Favorite website?
It's actually a Facebook community that I go on. It's the Reading and Writing Strategies Group. Very well informed. Jennifer Cervallo is leading that one, and she is unbelievably knowledgeable. So I get an awful lot of insight from that.
Great. You're going to a desert island, 3 books you can bring with you. What are they?
I'm not going to that desert island. I'm sorry. Anybody who knows me knows there's no way there's 3 books going with me. I come with all my books or I don't.
I love that answer. Yeah. Your favorite genre? You've kind of told me this earlier, but I'll ask you again.
I think it's historical fiction for me. I just love that it develops empathy with the children. And for me, facts are interesting. But until I understand what the perspective was for the people involved, and I would just add in for me, I'm teaching in Boyle Heights in Los Angeles, which is where a lot of Japanese Americans were removed during World War II. But it's now a predominantly Latino or Hispanic community. So my children know none of that local history. And when I first moved there and tried to tell them that, they were going, yeah, facts, facts, facts. But using picture books to show them, and one of the picture books I have is actually set in Boyle Heights. When I read that to them, they went, oh, that's different because this is about a little girl and a little boy and they grew up in the place where I am here. So it makes a difference.
That's fascinating. And have you a favorite movie that was adapted from a book?
I have one that's coming. The one and only Ivan is coming out.
Oh, lovely.
On Disney. So I think that's the one that I'm really looking forward to the most. Other than that, it's probably going really classic, going back to The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. The original version.
Yeah. Great. And if you had one wish for children going back to school in September, what is that wish for them?
That they just feel secure and that they're reunited with their friends, that they feel safe, they feel secure, and they feel able to talk to adults in their life about what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Trasa. It's been absolutely wonderful speaking to you, and I know that the listeners will take a lot from this.
It's been a pleasure.